This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler joins us live in studio on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth and development. You like my swoosh? That is smoking, isn't it?
It makes me nervous, though. It makes me feel like I really have to be on top of my game when you play sounds like that.
When are you not on top of your game?
I get very nervous coming in here, Coy.
Do you really?
I do.
Are you serious? Brian, you've been doing this for years.
I know, but I'm still feel like I need to get better at it.
You're fantastic. What are you kidding? You don't need to get nervous. These folks love you. You're a good man. You're Charlottesville tomorrow. Cvilletomorrow.org.
I was just fishing for a compliment there. Thanks.
Oh, there you go. Well, nothing wrong with that. Speaking of producer, a guy who produces some really sweet numbers that have changed the political landscape in Virginia, arguably, when it comes to political journalism, and that is David Poole.
David Poole.
He is the man.
I happen to know where he is right now.
Where? Are you serious?
He's somewhere between here and Richmond. Because
I
just spent an hour with him, and he said, I'm getting in the car. I'm heading back to Richmond.
There you go. There you go.
I said, well, can I talk about you on the radio? And he said, sure.
Sure. So tell folks who David Poole is.
He is the director of the Virginia Public Access Project, VPAP, VPAP.org.
And it's one of my favorite websites.
They have made a name for themselves. They may be one of the only VPAPs in the country that has taken this state level and now local level data, which is why I'm talking to him, about the money in politics and made it available in an easy to search fashion.
Yeah.
You can search for donors. You can search for candidates and who gave money. You can slice and dice and say what industry gave this person money. You can find out how lobbyists are spending their money. That's a new feature of the VPAP website.
You can follow the money, literally.
You can.
In Virginia politics. And we're one of the only states that has something like that.
The data goes way back, too. I mean, a long way back. Now, we started working with David Poole and VPAP in 2007 at Charlottesville Tomorrow because we loved the interface that you've got for their data. Lets you map things, lets you find the candidates and follow that money, as you said. But they didn't have it at the local level. And the reason is local candidates traditionally file their information on paper. The treasurer for a campaign will basically handwrite, you know, on a piece of paper who the donations
Joe
were from.
Joe Jones gave us $1,000. Right. Mary Jones gave us $1,500. Yep. Yeah.
And then they take that down to the local registrar's office.
And it goes into a folder.
It goes into a folder. And it stays there in a file cabinet.
Yeah.
So we said to David, hey, can we help you out here? We will go get that paper and make sure it gets to Richmond where you can put it in your database.
Digitize it, as it were.
Yes.
Put it online.
And we did that. And so in 2007 was the first time in Charlottesville and Albemarle County that we had local elections integrated into the VPAP website. We're hoping to do that again in 2009. In fact, one of the local candidates, John Lowry, who's considering running, he hasn't declared officially yet, but even though he's filed the paperwork.
Albemarle County Board of Supervisors.
He's running thinking about running in the Samuel Miller District.
Yeah.
He is filing electronically, which you can opt to do as a candidate. So if there are any candidates out there listening, we want you to file electronically because that makes everything easier for everybody.
Because the numbers are going to get online anyway. You might as well go ahead and do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just simpler and quicker. And then the data goes straight to VPAP.
And Charlottesville Albemarle is one of the only localities that's putting
it. It's a small group. I think VPAP is working with maybe, I want to say, 10 or 12 localities.
Oh, so it's a lot more than in 07. Yeah.
Yep. And if you go to their website, you can click on that and see the map and see where they are in Virginia.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them are up in Northern Virginia. And what's interesting about that is David was telling me that some of those boards of supervisors, like Loudoun County, they elect the entire board in that election cycle. So they only have a local election there for Board of Supervisors.
They're not staggered
every
like
four
ours are.
Years, not staggered terms. So I can't imagine having City Council or the Board of Supervisors all elected at once.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Sounds like that makes things a little bit more difficult for you.
Well, it would be I think what's interesting about that is
more difficult for the community because you could have all new people.
You could. And then you don't.
Then they got a learning curve.
Right. And think about the county executive or the city manager and them having to, you know, educate a whole new board about how things work.
It really empowers staff over the elected folks in a situation like that.
So I'm glad we have staggered terms in the county. We have 3 seats up this November. City Council, we have 2 seats.
Right.
And
right.
And so we'll be tracking those races. And I want to thank David for driving up and speaking with me today about our joint interest.
Yeah, and folks, if you've never checked that out, it is a fascinating website, VPAP, www.ncc.org. And you can go back. All those numbers from the local 2007 races are still there, I would assume.
Oh, yeah.
It's really cool to see in a local race who's giving them money, where the money's coming from for this particular candidate.
Yep. And you can see political action committee money and other groups like that and how they divvy out their funds and who funds them. So you may go to a candidate and just see, oh, it's this one pack, you know, that gives them money.
But then you click on the pack and find out.
And you find out where that money's coming from.
Yeah, it really is interesting. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can learn a whole lot online at cvilletomorrow.org.
You're listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, thanks to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you want to get involved with the show, feel free to comment on our blog at cvillepodcast.com.
Pi is the greatest common denominator out there, except maybe a glass of wine.
And March 17th on this show is when we're celebrating our first Pi Day of 2009.
March 17th? That's right, because March 14th is a Saturday, right?
3.14 pie day.
So we're going to celebrate on March 17th, Tuesday, and we're going to eat pie.
We are.
Right here.
We are. And I'm going to bring in a pie.
I'll bring a pie.
And I'm going to...
Any listener can bring a pie?
Off the air, I'm going to tell you where I'm going to go so we don't go to the same place. And then
we wouldn't want to do that, would we?
And then I'll bring it in and we'll announce where it came from.
Yeah, and we'll enjoy some pie.
Yeah.
That'll be a good time. So what's this? Where should we start with this water supply plan? What's the latest chapter in the saga in the new Meadow Creek Parkway that we call the water supply plan?
You know, when we were talking about David Poole and being able to track money, you know, I think we need a website to track infrastructure projects.
That would be very cool. I would love that.
Maybe we should build that.
You should do that. That would be perfect on Seville Tomorrow, where you could just like click on something and it would give you all the latest.
Because, you know, they're talking about doing that with
the federal
stimulus money. Giving taxpayers a way to track where all the money's going.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great idea. And even at the local level, I think there's talk about, you know, putting up on websites where the federal stimulus money's going.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Where is it going?
It's the thing about the water supply plan is it's hard to know how much money we're going to spend. We've already spent a lot of money studying
millions,
different options.
Millions, yes.
So anyway, it's an ongoing challenge. And as I predicted, we will be studying this throughout 2009. And
yeah, you called that one a long time ago.
And that wasn't hard to call. But Mayor Norris, Democrat, City Council.
Mayor Dave Norris, yes.
Was at the local Democrats gathering. They have a breakfast once a month.
What, over at Jabba?
Over at Jabba, yep. Jefferson Area Board for Aging.
Yeah.
And
it's a nice room.
This was the headline I started our story with. This is up on our news center. What happens when you take the mayor, the chairman of the Board of Supervisors, put them in a room of about 50 Democrats, then add a little water?
Did you write that? I read that. I was laughing.
Did.
That's very nice.
It quickly reaches the boiling point.
Did anybody yell?
I over-dramatized that a little.
Did anybody yell? Did anybody get testy? Get a little feisty?
There was a little bit of feistiness in the room.
Really?
People were not yelling.
But nobody's throwing any punches or anything.
No. But the funny thing was, about an hour into it, Lloyd Snook, city Democrat, a lot of people know in the community.
Of course.
Lloyd's waving the white flag and saying, I don't know what on earth you're talking about. You're using all these terms I don't understand.
And that was a sincere complaint on the part of some folks in the audience that the legislators were using a little too much inside baseball.
And, you know, Lloyd Snook is somebody that follows local government, local news very closely.
Yeah.
And so there's an otherwise engaged resident. Follows local news.
That still can't keep up.
Is having trouble figuring this out. So I think to myself, that means I'm not doing my job well enough. So, you know, Charlottesville Tomorrow is going to think about what else can we do to help people understand where we are with this complex project.
It's very complex. It is.
And there are a lot of unknowns about it. And that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, too.
Yeah. Like, how much is that pipeline going to cost? We don't know.
We don't know how much anything's going to cost.
It's going to cost a whole lot of money. You can bank on the fact that the whole plan is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars and your rates are going to go through the roof.
All right.
That we know.
But here's what was interesting about it. Mayor Norris and David Slutsky, the chair of the Board of Supervisors, do have a lot of common ground on this. And so one of the first things I did.
They enjoy water just like the next guy.
We all need water.
Yes.
But no, there are five things that I highlighted in the beginning of the article that they all agree on.
Okay.
A lot of common ground. Now, not everybody in the community shares that common ground.
Yeah.
But these are two very important figures in the conversation, the chair of the board and the mayor of the council.
Right.
So to have them on the same page is promising.
David Sletsky and Dave Norris.
Right.
Okay.
So they all agree. All, when I say all, I'm adding in Liz Palmer, who was another member of this panel at the breakfast.
Okay.
Liz Palmer.
When was this breakfast? Saturday?
Saturday.
Okay.
She's on the Albemarle County Service Authority Board.
Uh-huh.
One of the other, of the four entities involved in this.
Yes.
The four-party agreement dates to 1972.
Was it really? Is it that old?
Came together and decided to do water together.
We've been trying to figure out water since 1972?
Well, we've been trying to figure out water going back to the 1880s.
Yeah.
But we've been doing it jointly.
Since 1972.
Since 1972.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. So anyway, all, meaning these three people at the Saturday breakfast, agreed we need a higher dam at Ragged Mountain. So Ragged Mountain is one of the places we have a reservoir now. These three people agree it needs to be higher. All agree the larger reservoir at Ragged Mountain needs to be connected by a new pipe to the South Fork Reservoir.
Right. And not Sugar Hollow anymore.
Right.
Which is where it is now.
That's my next point. All agree that 13-mile Sugar Hollow pipeline, built in like 1927, flows downhill from, you know, Shenandoah National Park almost.
All the way to Charlottesville.
All the way to Charlottesville, Ragged Mountain, needs to be decommissioned.
Okay.
Get rid of that pipe. It's breaking. Let's stop using it.
Yeah.
All right. All agree that there are environmental benefits to allowing that water, instead of being diverted down that pipe to, from Sugar Hollow, let the water go into the Mormons River, which then finds its way to South Fork Ravana Reservoir.
And then you pipe it over.
Then you pipe it over.
To Ragged Mountain.
So they agree that there needs to be that pipe, and there are environmental benefits to letting the stream flow more naturally.
Yes.
All right. And all would prefer not to get our drinking water from the James River. So that's a lot of common ground, I think.
Yes.
Now, the devil's in the details.
Yeah, there you go. And let's talk about those details when we get back. A break for local news and weather. We're going to continue this conversation with Brian Wheeler on the other side. Brian, we also have a whole lot we want to get to. The county budget, the city efficiency study, the city budget, some other news items. Big candidate training forum tonight in the city. We can talk about that. And some calendar updates. A lot of good stuff to get to. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
And let's rejoin our conversation.
We were talking about the water supply, and I was outlining all the areas of agreement that a member of City Council, Dave Norris, and a member of the Board of Supervisors, David Slutsky, have in common about the water supply. And they're thinking about how we get a safe and sufficient supply of water to get us through droughts, get us through growth in population over the next 50 years. That said, there are certainly some key differences. And some of the areas lacking consensus today include the following. Debate about how much water the population is going to need in 50 years. How many people will be living here, and how much water will they be using? That's a key question.
Yeah.
If you're going to build a water supply plan, what's your target? How much water are you trying to get?
Yeah, yeah.
There's differences of opinion about that. There are differences of opinion about how much water we could conserve as a community.
Right, right.
You know, low flush toilets, low flow shower heads.
Have I said yet on the air that I hate low flush toilets? I think I just did. Please continue.
Okay. Well, now, Coy, if
better have your plunger ready. Let me just say that.
If your city council wanted to conserve water, they could pass an ordinance, I guess, that would require all new homes to have low flush toilets.
Yeah.
But that would be the kind of concrete thing you could put on paper, and you could say to state and federal regulators, hey, look at this.
Yeah.
We're taking this seriously. Here's a specific thing we've put into our comp plan that's going to conserve water.
That stuff makes a big difference.
University of Virginia has conserved a lot of water.
Yeah, yeah.
And but they're in charge of their whole enterprise.
They can say you must use a low flush
toilet.
Yeah, yeah.
The city and the county don't have that flexibility. They can try to incent businesses. They can try to incent users to use less water through conservation programs and other incentives. But anyway, there's some disagreement about how much we could conserve, and then more importantly, probably how much the regulators would pay attention to that. So if you come to them and say, we're moving the goalpost, we told you a couple years ago, we think we need this amount of water for this number of people. Oh, but now we've got a new calculation that shows we're going to use less water. Instead of conserving 5%, we think we can get that number to 10 or 15%. you're moving the goalposts.
And haven't they sort of given indications that they're not going to be too keen on that, the conservation argument?
That's the conventional wisdom,
yeah,
that they would not be too keen about the goalposts moving.
To me, the big number, Brian, really is the number of people you're expecting in 50 years, because we determined that number at the height of the real estate boom, right, when we were approving neighborhoods left and right. But it's a different situation today. That, to me, is the key number, because if we're expecting much less people in 50 years, then you really don't need a huge...
Well,
bathtub.
David Slutsky brought out a new argument at the Democratic breakfast last Saturday that I had not heard before. And his big...
Bottled water? Just a lot of bottled water?
No. His on the question of population, he said his biggest concern was, do we have the right number, and have we underestimated? So, for example, Mr. Slutsky has made a name for himself for trying to limit growth in Albemarle County's rural area. He's put forward ideas about transferred development rights, different ways to stop development in the rural area, which, by the way, all supervisors of all parties would agree with.
Yeah.
They all want to limit growth in the rural area. The reason is it's in the watershed for the most part. So they want to protect the watershed.
Yeah. If you start building neighborhoods around those streams and stuff, it'll choke the water supply.
Some of the key assumptions about population, Coy, in the current adopted water supply plan, approved in 2006, were based on the county's 1996 comprehensive plan. And in that plan, they went through the comp plan and they said, okay, Albemarle, where do you think you're going to have people and how many will there be in your designated growth areas? Now, on this show over the past 3 years, we have talked a lot about the difficulty our planners have projecting how many people are going to live in certain places. So Crozet, for example. In Crozet, when the master plan was approved, the master plan is a 20-year sort of finer detail plan for a specific community. In the Crozet master plan in 2004, they projected 12,500 people. Well, that's the number that ended up in the water plan. Now, Crozet is not on the urban water supply, so this is a little outside and not necessarily germane. But my point is, after they started approving major developments in Crozet,
they doubled that number.
Yeah. And they said, well, actually, we think we can get 24,000 people in Crozet. Now, we don't know by when, but we know we can get more than 12,500.
And so they've approved, they're planning for that much, yeah.
So that means Beaver Creek Reservoir, which serves Crozet, we now have a new planning horizon for it. It's only going to last to 2035 based on revised population numbers. So that's another water supply problem looming for the future.
Oh, Lord.
But back to the current water supply problem. What David Slutsky was pointing out was the Places 29 area. So Places 29 is the 29 North Corridor.
Right.
So you got Piney Mountain, Hollymead, and then the Urban Ring North on 29. And I went back and checked some of those assumptions that were made by the previous consultants. This is even before Gannett Fleming was involved. So a previous consultant called VHB, and I looked at the numbers that they were using and how many people they projected for the Places 29 area. The reason that's important is we're in the middle of adopting a Places 29 master plan, the 20-year plan for 29
okay.
North.
Yeah.
So we have some current thinking about how many people and homes can go into that planning area. So I went back and checked their assumptions. And what's interesting about it is...
And when was that?
The assumptions were from the 1996 comp plan.
Okay.
And in a study that was completed in 1997. Okay.
And those are the numbers that went into this factoring the 50-year water supply?
It's one set of numbers.
Yeah.
They don't rely on just one source to think about population. You're looking at other... To come up with that magic number of how much water we need is a very complex thing.
Yeah.
But this is one source. So I just pointed out, because you mentioned population. So here, I'll get to the point. VHB projected in 2050 that there might be, I'll use the high-end number, about 21,000 dwelling units in the Places 29 area. 21,000.
29 North, okay.
Yep. All right. Places 29 is projecting that for 25 years earlier, we will already be at that number.
Oh, Lord. So they're way off. The 1996-97 numbers are really low compared to what we know now.
Right. And David Slutsky was pointing this out. I don't know if he had the data, but he raised that concern. And he said, what if we are so successful in Albemarle County in getting people to move into these designated growth areas, it may...
Where you have to supply water.
Where they're on public water.
Yes.
You may throw off the assumption about what percent of Albemarle's population will be on public water.
it may be much higher than we're thinking.
Right. And the number that they're thinking is 61%, I believe. And what Mr. Slutsky is saying is maybe it's not going to be 61. Maybe it'll be 71, 75, something higher. And given that Places 29, that master planning process, has given some new thinking to that question.
Right, right.
That's another factor in this. So that's a long way of answering your, you know, you just mentioned the population numbers. How do we know? They could go up or down.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But here's one piece
of... Well, and when I mentioned them, I was thinking that maybe they're projected to be too high. But you're saying we've got numbers coming in now, and Slutsky is pointing out that perhaps they're projecting them to be too low.
Could be.
Yeah.
Now, and Crozet is another example. So there's two of the biggest recently master planned areas in Albemarle County, and we've got real examples of where maybe the original population and dwelling unit numbers were way off.
We're way low.
Way low.
And there's going to be a lot more people in those areas requiring municipal water.
Now, what's going to bring people here? Do we have the jobs? Do we have...
Local radio.
You know,
I'd like to believe.
The economy, is that going to... You know, when in this climate where nothing's being built and people, you know, we're not growing quickly, I think everyone's questioning those numbers, and that's natural. But I tell you, when people in 2005 were watching everything getting built and approved... The first question on people's mind when a new development came forward at these public hearings, like Biscuit Run,
yeah.
The first question was, is there enough water?
Is there enough sewer?
Second question, enough sewer. And three, where are the kids going to go to school? I mean, those are the three things that we kept hearing over and over.
Yeah.
And then transportation was the other one.
And the answer we often got from some on the Board of Supervisors was, you know, we're going to approve it. And, well, those questions aren't ours charged to answer. You got to talk to the water people. You got to, you know, you got to talk to the school board and... And we're going to go ahead and prove it and just worry about infrastructure later.
So let me go back to some of these areas of lacking consensus. And the last one's an important one, and I'll wrap this up. But it has to do with the design size and cost of an expanded Ragged Mountain Dam. Earlier, I said an area of agreement between David Slutsky, Liz Palmer, and Dave Norris is that there needs to be a bigger dam at Ragged Mountain. What was newsmaking on Saturday was Mayor Norris saying that he felt like what needed to be investigated was building on to the existing dam. The dam built in 1908, the lower Ragged Mountain Dam.
So not an all-new, super dam, but just add on to what exists.
Raise the pool by 13 feet instead of 45 feet. One of the reasons Norris favors that is it's a lot cheaper.
I like it already.
less impact on the environment in the Ragged Mountain Natural Area.
Right. You don't have to cut down as many trees.
The reservoir doesn't push up against I-64, so there's less mitigation work up there.
Yeah.
Again, makes it cheaper. The question I asked him after the breakfast was over was, okay, if that's the plan, how much water does it get you? And he said he didn't look at it that way. It wasn't for him. It was let's ask the question about how much we're going to need. Let's talk about conservation. Let's talk about reducing the amount of water we think we're going to need as a community, and let's figure out what the cost. How can we save some money? Do this a little more cost effectively, and put together some other options that will get us to a sufficient amount of water.
Yeah.
And so there's where we're going with this. Is this. This disagreement, then, do you stick with the plan, which has costs that we don't fully understand or know?
We just know they're really high.
We know there's a lot of infrastructure to be built to get us a safe and sufficient supply of water. What you're going to see in 2009 is an expert panel, independent review team, technical review team, looking at the design of the Ragged Mountain Dam. Now, the design they are looking at is not the one Mayor Norris wants.
It's the super dam.
It's the bigger dam.
Yeah.
And so one of the key questions here is if you start changing the plan like that, what will the regulators say about that? What they're going to say is you need a new permit. Now, I've asked Norris about that, and he said, well, you know, if we had to spend 6 months in some bureaucratic process, you know, filling out paper, that was how he viewed it, that would be time well spent if we end up with something that's a lot cheaper.
Right, right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Others say...
Try to control costs.
Others say you would have to start the whole process over, multi-year effort. Millions more would have to go into studies and redefining everything to make sure it worked.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, SeavilleTomorrow.org. Didn't the water folks have a meeting yesterday or the day before where they approved... an increase in rates. I heard that on WINA.
They did yesterday.
Yesterday. And they were going to go up by double digits in some places, right?
The wholesale rate increase in the city is 7.83%, so single digits there. Double digits in the county, 11.4%. And that's another theme you're going to see, the county picking up a greater and greater share of the cost because that's where the people are. As the county grows, they pick up more of the cost.
That are on municipal water.
Yeah. And it's the people often ask, who's paying for all this? The ratepayers. So if you're on public water today, water and sewer, you're the people paying for.
And your rates are going up.
Your rates will go
and
up.
And an increase was approved yesterday.
Well, it was approved at the RWSA level. That will now go to a public hearing, and yeah. then it'll come down to the city and the
And I guess where I'm going with this
service
is
authority as well.
With all of this infrastructure that they want to build as part of this plan, folks better get used to this news that rate increases are being approved because they're not going to approve a huge one overnight. They're going to go up. You might see this every year.
They will, but
for the next few
this
years.
Is a 50-year water supply plan, so a lot of these big capital projects are spread out over a long period of time. Certainly, if the community decided right now, let's build the entire plan now, build the big dam, build the big pipe, build the water treatment capacity that you need.
Yeah.
Because if you collect a lot more water, guess what? You have to be able to treat it too. And then you have to upgrade the sewer side of it as well. If we could decide as a community to do it all.
We need some of that stimulus money.
But then you'd be paying a whole lot more. What they're trying to do is figure out how can you spread out the pain.
Yeah. Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We have time for some of these.
You got me talking about water and I just couldn't stop.
Well, you can talk about water all day.
Let's talk about the city candidate training forum, because this is a new event. I think it's pretty interesting.
Yes.
Sherry Iachetta, who's the general registrar in the city of Charlottesville, she is having tonight in city council chambers at 7 o'clock a candidate training forum. Now, Charlottesville Tomorrow covers city council candidates, but also on the ballot in November in the city will be school board, sheriff, treasurer, commissioner of revenue, commonwealth's attorney. So if you are interested in any of those positions or helping people who might be interested in those positions, then Sherry Iachetta is having a candidate training forum, and you can come learn about campaign finance rules, how to get petition signatures, the rules for party nominees versus independents, what the deadlines are, and all that stuff.
It's more about the rules versus the Sorensen Institute's candidate training program, which is this is how you win.
Right.
That's not really this.
Which I took that class.
You did. You were a graduate.
It worked twice.
Yeah, there you go.
and she is, if you cannot go tonight and you're still interested, both these events are on our calendar. March 25th at 2 p.m. is another opportunity. So they're doing one at night. They're doing one during the day. And I just think it's a great way to expose people to how the local political process works and what you have to do to get involved.
Absolutely. And give us the latest now on the county budget and the city budget and where we are with those.
Important event tomorrow evening. A lot of people have already heard about this, but the county, Albemarle County, is having their first public hearing on the budget, 6 o'clock tomorrow, Lane Auditorium. Typically, they put the sign up sheet out an hour or so early so you can go sign up. If you want to speak, you can have 3 minutes in front of the Board of Supervisors. Let them know what your priorities are for the upcoming county budget. The city council will get their first presentation of the budget next week, March 2nd, and the public hearing for them is not until March 16th at 7 p.m. So we're getting into budget mode, public hearings. The community has a chance
here. I love this. I love
to weigh in.
I totally love this time of year because it just brings people out, you know, and I don't have a dog in this hunt, but it's like people on both sides of the issues, you know, they come out, they speak out, and you see people being citizens and not just, you know, consumers in an economy. They're citizens, members of a community, and they come out and they speak up. I love this. I love it. There's going to be some fireworks, though, you think?
Well, I think there will be.
There usually is, isn't there?
Usually. Yeah. I mean, when you start talking about taxes, people get excited.
Indeed, as well they should. Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Corey. Appreciate it. See you again next week. And you can learn more online at seavilletomorrow.org. Y'all have a great night. Talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.